Morning, everybody. It's Pastor Brian Ross from Grace Life Bible Church in Grand Rapids, Michigan. I want to welcome you to our midweek video here this week. Appreciate you tuning in as always. If you haven't already done so, if you consider subscribing and ringing the alarm bell here on YouTube as a way of staying current with our ministry. We go live from our assembly building on Sunday mornings as well as when we create content for you here midweek. We would certainly appreciate that. My featured book this week is still the book Don't Pass Over Easter, A New Defense of Easter in Acts 12:4. Now, this book is no longer on sale. That sale has expired, seeing that the Easter holiday has is now over. But my featured book this week is still a copy of Don't Pass Over Easter, A New Defense of Easter in Acts 12:4. And you'll see why here in a minute, because the theme of this video is exploring a few things relative to the topic here of Easter in Acts 12:4 that have come up of late. In some videos. So if you haven't already picked this up, please consider doing that as a way of supporting the ministry, as well as for your own information and edification. We'd certainly appreciate that. Also want to remind you about our Rumble channel here, Grace Life Bible Church on Rumble. We established this as an alt-text site to YouTube should something happen to our YouTube ministry. So if you're into alt-text sites, would like an alternative to YouTube, please consider joining us here on Rumble as well. So what I want to talk about in this video is a few different videos that have been released here in the last week related to the topic of Easter and Acts 12:4. Okay. The first one, and I'll leave a link in the description to this, is a review of the book, Don't Pass Over Easter. Okay. And this was reviewed on YouTube a couple days back by Turretin Fan. You can see right here, Brian Ross, Don't Pass Over Easter, responding to Acts 12:4, and he reviews the book in this particular video. Now, the video is an hour long. I don't have time to play the whole thing here in this video, but I did want to draw people's attention to the fact that the book had been reviewed. Turretin Fan's review is, on the whole, complimentary and positive. He does take exception with a few points. As well as some formatting issues of the charts and tables in the back. And there are a couple typos that he points out that we need to get fixed. But on the whole, his review of the book is complimentary and positive. Now, the reason that Turretin Fan was reviewing the book was part of his due diligence and preparation for a debate that he was going to have with Nick Sayers on the topic of Easter in Acts 12:4. Now, this debate happened. Today is Thursday morning. I think this happened on Tuesday. I have not had opportunity or time yet to listen to the debate between Turretin Fan and Nick. But I do appreciate Nick Sayers. He is the one who reached out to me and sent me the review of the book. I didn't know Turretin Fan had done a review of the book. And Nick had done that as part of, he was just notifying me and letting me know. But the reason Turretin Fan did this was because of this debate. So I've not had a chance to watch the debate, but I'll also leave a link in the description for this video to both the Easter debate here between Turretin Fan and Nick Sayers, as well as Turretin Fan's review of the book. So there's been that whole thing happening, which I was not expecting, and all this has obviously happened since I made my last video last Thursday morning. And then also over the weekend was the release of this video right here, Easter is Pagan, So Why Do So Many Believers Celebrate It, by KJB Believers 82 on YouTube or Aaron Taylor on Facebook. Okay, so this video was released on the 8th, I believe, of April, and it made the rounds on YouTube, on Facebook over the Easter weekend. So the primary purpose of this video is to offer some thoughts on this video here by Aaron Taylor. Okay, so as I was watching Aaron Taylor's video, aside from the fact that there's some statements that are made in the video that I think are just factually not true. For example, tying Easter to the Anglo-Saxon goddess Astarte, which those who know about the debate related to Easter being pagan know that Astarte is a Babylonian Semitic goddess, not an Anglo-Saxon goddess, the Anglo-Saxon goddess, if that's involved here at all, goes by a different name. So I think there's some factual errors in the video. But as I was thinking about what I was listening to as I watched this video, it sounded familiar to me. And I had a hunch that the video had been largely taken from this blog entry by True Time Radio. The word Easter in Acts 12 is the word Easter in Acts 12 is correct. So I want to point out a couple things then related to this video. So Easter is pagan, so why do so many believers celebrate it? YouTube video by Aaron Taylor. On April 8, 2023, KJB Believers 83, Aaron Taylor released a video on YouTube titled Easter is Pagan, so why do so many believers celebrate it? And again, that's this video right here. Okay. The video was shared and discussed on Facebook over Easter weekend 2023. Upon examination, it's clear that the video was cobbled together from extracts of Truth Time Radio's blog entry, The Word Easter in Acts 12 is Correct, from April 20th, 2020. So that's this blog entry right here. Okay. There was no attribution or acknowledgement given by the video's creator to the contents of the that the contents of the video were not his own work, but were rather that of TTR. So nothing is ever said that the contents of the video that are being presented are not the work of the video's creator. Okay. Not only is this a violation of TTR's copyright policy, see the highlighted yellow box at the bottom of this document, but the creator accepted praise for the video both on Facebook and in the YouTube comments as though it were his own work, while mocking and scoffing at those who questioned the veracity of some of the claims made in the video. So this is sort of like what got me, what sort of prompted me to make this video, if I'm just being totally honest. You have a video here that is not the work of the person who made the video. The person gives no attribution to where he's getting the information from, and then proceeds to mock and scoff and name call and, you know, use a litany of tactics against the people who are trying to engage with the content of the video, and, you know, does so in this sort of very verbose way, if I could say it that way. Okay. So first, so how do you read this document? Follow the numbers in the right-hand margin as they identify the order in which Taylor purloined TTR's blog entry to create the video. The small numbers indicate the timestamps from the video where each numbered section was pilfered. Finally, each numbered section is identified in a different color highlighter. For example, section 1 is yellow, whereas section 2 is green. Please play the video and follow the numbered highlighted sections below to track how the video was cobbled together. So there will be a link in the description of this video to not only the video itself, but also to this document where you can do here what I'm suggesting. But let me show you how the document works. Okay. So you can, as you scroll through the document, you're going to see numbered sections and then small numbers. So the document starts right here. Okay. So this yellow section is the first thing that is taken from the blog entry and then presented and read without any attribution being given to TTR. So here you have the section, and then you have the timestamp in the video where you will find that information. Okay. So you'll notice that the creator of the video jumps around. So he takes this. And then if you scroll up here, then you'll find number 2. So you go here, and then here, and then here. That's 4. And then 5 is down here. And you can see that each section is demarcated by the order in which it was taken, number 1, the timestamps that it relates to in the video, and thirdly, a color coding on the section. So, for example, all this pinkish highlighting is going to section 9 from 907 to 931. Okay. So that to me is sort of the first problem here. So understand, a video is made using other material. No attribution is given to where the material is coming from. It's taken and cobbled together and made to, and then read from, and I'll add, read in a way that is even copying the exclamation points and expressive nature, and nothing is given, no attribution is given, okay? Now, I didn't know that when I made this comment here. This was my first comment in the discussion that happened on YouTube on one Facebook wall. I just simply said, Easter is not inextricably linked to paganism. Acts 12:4 in the King James Bible is not referring to a pagan holiday. Please listen. And I just left a playlist. That's all I said. So to the left is my first comment on Facebook. The link is to my three-part series here, Acts 12:4, Don't Pass Over Easter. This is when I originally taught this material in 2017, which then seeded the material for what would later become the book that I've been featuring here of late on this channel. Okay. Now, so this is what I said. And then here's the creator of the video. Okay. So to the left is Aaron Taylor's first comment. Note the personal attacks and ad hominem arguments. And he tags Danny Latta. So here we go. So this is referring to me, a King James Bible corrector. Always has been, always will be. He's a Greek scholar. Therefore, his final authority lies in the so-called originals. Not even sure if he knows what that means. Danny Latta, would you look at who the cat drug in? Oh, yeah, a flow-blown limited forgiver as well. Almost forgot that. So here you have, you know, personal ad hominem attacks and arguments being used by a person that didn't even do his own work to create a video. Okay. And he's trying to, I just say one thing, and he's trying to, you know, castigate me for the points that apparently make me a terrible person. Okay. So here was my second post asking the participants in discussion to consider some other relevant verses that were omitted from TTR's article and therefore Taylor's video. So I said, the context of Acts 12 is Peter and the little flock. The text never says that Herod was celebrating anything. So talking about Acts 12:4, which I'll read in a minute. His actions with respect to James and Peter were to please the apostolic Jewish leadership. The Passover included the Feast of Unleavened Bread, as the following scriptures plainly attest. These verses, so that'd be Ezekiel 45:21, Matthew 26:17-18, and Luke 22:1. These verses include Passover and unleavened bread together. So I'm giving references from a King James Bible for people to check out, and nobody ever does that because the name calling has poisoned the well without anybody actually interacting with the content of what is going on. Okay. And then, Having been summoned, Danny Latta showed up and dismissed over 3 hours of teaching on the topic as, quote, garbage after only watching 2 minutes, 21 seconds of lesson one. And this while supporting the plagiarized video. So after having been tagged by Taylor, Latta shows up. Ross, it's safe to say you aren't a King James Bible believer. 2 minutes, 21 seconds into your video and you went outside of the Bible. So I watched my first video, and at the 2:21 mark, I'm reading from prepared notes because I'm teaching a public lesson. And that's, you know, that's a terrible thing, apparently. So I said, glad you could make that judgment after 2:21 of 3 hours worth of teaching. And then he says, not worth wasting an hour of my time to hear your garbage, sir. Sorry, but that's fact. So I have raised a legitimate question about three passages. It's name called, ad hominemed, and dismissed summarily out of hand. Meanwhile, the contents of the video are done by somebody who's not even doing their own work, their own research, their own study. They're cobbling together, as the top of this document demonstrates, the work of somebody else in a different order. I would argue to escape so that it's not apparent what's going on. It's not hard to figure this stuff out. Okay. So it's not like I've spent hours and hours and hours trying to figure this out. I heard the video. I recognized from stuff I read before, and I searched the document, and within literally 2 or 3 minutes, there was evidence of what was going on with the document. And then on top of that, now you have these type of tactics that are being used by supposed believers and members of the body of Christ against somebody else, and not even engaging with the verses that are presented. Okay. And this kind of stuff is going on all the time. So to be clear, nowhere in the video itself or in the description under the video on YouTube does Taylor credit TTR as the source of the video's contents. Taylor repeatedly takes credit for the video's contents as though that was his own work. He takes credit on Facebook, he takes credit on YouTube. He never says where the information came from. If Brother Taylor had permission from TTR to use their article to produce his video, he certainly never said so or gave attribution to TTR as their copyright policy demands. So here's the copyright policy in this highlighted box from TTR. You can read that yourself. It'll be very clear that their work can be used and shared only if proper attribution to TTR and its links to its websites are included, and that didn't happen. So let's get to the real core here and what really matters in all this, and that is the unanswered and unaddressed issues. So the following is a summary of the points I endeavored to make in the Facebook discussion on this topic. None of these points received any substantive interaction and were summarily dismissed by Taylor and Latta. Okay. Number one, the word Easter is not inextricably linked to paganism. The word Easter is not inextricably linked to paganism. Now, I cover this thoroughly in the book, but I'm a King James Bible corrector, so therefore nothing I say is valid according to the way these brethren use their argumentation. So maybe they would listen to the King James Version Today website, which is a website that is devoted to defense of the King James Bible. And by the way, this is a source that I cite in my book, Don't Pass Over Easter. And notice that the first section of their book, of their article, is that that Easter is not a pagan word. So maybe if they won't listen to me, maybe they'll read this article. Okay. Again, written by the King James Version Today, a website that is devoted to the defense of the King James Bible. They have an entry here. And by the way, it was this article that first caused me to change my mind. I used to teach the view propagated by Dr. Samuel C. Gipp in his book, The Answer Book, that is largely reflected in the TTR article as well as in Aaron Taylor's video. It was this article that got me thinking about this, written by a King James only advocate, calling into question whether the traditional defense of Easter in Acts 12:4 is accurate. Okay. And part of it centers around the identification that Easter is not an exclusively pagan word. So maybe if folks can't listen to me because I'm a terrible person, they can read the article themselves, and I'll leave a description to it in the link to this video, or link in the description to this video. Number two, if the King James translators thought Easter was an exclusively pagan word, then why did they include a table in the front of the 1611 to help the reader find Easter forever? So this is a page in the 1611. There's a table in the 1611. It serves as sort of a calculator, if you will, to assist in the finding of the date of Easter forever. So if Easter is an exclusively pagan word, and if the King James translators are using Easter as a pagan word, then why in the world do they include in the front material of the 1611 a calculator to find Easter forever? See, this is information that Taylor and Latta don't know about. And I also presented, by the way, a picture of this in the in on Facebook, and nobody said anything about it or interacted with it. So evidentiary items like the three verses I showed you earlier, what we'll go over here shortly, as well as stuff like this, are never dealt with or never interacted with in favor of summarily dismissing people through name-calling, ad hominems, and other tactics, okay? So Easter is non-exclusive, is not inextricably tied to paganism. The king, number two, the King James translators include a calculator in the front of the 1611 to find Easter, okay, to calculate the date of Easter forever, all right? So what you'll realize when you study the word Easter is that Easter has a long usage in the English language to refer to either the resurrection of Jesus Christ or the Jewish feast of Passover. This is objective. This is demonstrable. And any part of this discussion about Easter in Acts 12:4 that stubbornly will not account for the facts of the case, to me, is a problem. Apparently, I have messed the numbering up. So let me try something here quickly. I know I updated this, so I must be using accidentally a dated copy because I fixed this numbering, but we'll move on because it'll take too long the video to fix it. So this should be number three, okay? Acts 12:4 in the King James Bible is not referring to a pagan holiday. The text of Acts 12 never says that Herod was celebrating anything. Rather, his actions are aimed at pleasing the apostate Jewish leadership that had long sought to persecute the 12 apostles and the Jewish kingdom church, i.e. the little flock. So let's look at it. Here's Acts 12. Here's verse 1. Now about that time, Herod the king stretched forth his hand to vex certain of the church. Now, the brothers in question here are right dividers. They understand or claim to understand the difference between the little flock and the body of Christ. So if Herod is stretching forth his hand to vex the church, he's not vexing the church, the body of Christ of this dispensation. He's vexing the believing Jewish church, the little flock church of the early Acts period. Okay. So how does Herod vex the church? He killed James, the brother of John, with the sword. That's how he seeks to vex this church. All right. And because he saw Herod, it pleased the Jews. He proceeded further to take Peter also. So the death of James, the brother of John, pleased the Jews. The Jews, who didn't like the Jewish kingdom church, the little flock, who have been persecuting it for the first at least seven chapters of the book of Acts. Okay? So when Herod sees that the death of James pleases the Jews, he reasons to take Peter also. Why? So that he can please the Jews. The Jews, who like Herod, don't like the Jewish kingdom church. It's very clear what's going on. He's arrested, Peter is arrested by Herod during the days of unleavened bread. Verse 4, and when he had apprehended him, he put him in prison and delivered him to four quaternions of soldiers to keep him, to keep Peter, intending after Easter to bring him forth to the people. Where in the first four verses of Acts 12 does it say that Herod is celebrating anything? Where does it say that? Okay. Where does it say that? It doesn't say that anywhere. That is an inference that is made because of a misidentification and a misunderstanding of the word Easter. But the text never says that. So let's look at it again. The text of Acts 12:4 never says that Herod was celebrating anything. Rather, his actions were aimed at pleasing the apostate Jewish leadership that had long sought to persecute the 12 apostles and the Jewish kingdom church, i.e. the little flock. So that's a fact. Next, the English word Easter was used for over 500 years to refer to the Jewish feast, Passover, before Tyndale coined the term Passover in 1530 while working on the Pentateuch. So the word Easter has a more than 500-year history in the English language as referring to the Jewish feast of Passover, before Tyndale even coins the word Passover in 1530. And again, this is objective, okay? Here is my research, all right? Notice, Easter in the English Bible, a brief look at the history of translation. We could trace this back all the way to the West Saxon Gospels of 990, and we can see that every time in the Gospels, the West Saxon Gospels only extend to Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, every time in Jewish context, referring to the Jewish Passover, the word, a form of the word Easter is used. The same in the West Saxon Gospels of 1175. When Wycliffe translates the Bible into Middle English, he transliterates the Latin and just simply calls it Pasch. But then Luther, when Luther translates the German New Testament, he translates it, all the Greek word Pascha, all 29 times as the word Ostern, a form of the word Ostern, which is the German word for Easter. So Luther obviously didn't think it was pagan or there was a problem with the word. And then notice Tyndall. When Tyndall translates the New Testament in 1526, every time the Greek word Pascha occurred in the text, Luther translated as some form of Easter. So there's a 500-year history of the English word Easter being used to describe the Jewish Passover. And then, and Tyndall coins the term, we could go now to the next table, and we could look. So here's the Pentateuch now, 1530 is the year, and notice what shows up for the first time, Passover. Because when Tyndall's working on the New Testament, or sorry, the Old Testament, he's trying to translate it, and the angel of death literally passed over. And so he coins the term Passover. And then slowly, over time, Passover replaces Easter to refer to the Jewish feast as a English word. These are objective facts. Okay, this has nothing to do with correcting the King James Bible. This has nothing to do with any of the ad hominems and personal stuff that was said. This has to do with objective facts and research. And whatever we're going to say about the Bible, it seems to me, needs to be supported by factual information. Okay. So the research has been done, but this is all dismissed as garbage after only listening to 2 minutes, 21 seconds, because the name calling has poisoned the well. And you need to understand, that's what's going on here, folks. It's amazing to me what is occurring in the public spaces as people are supposedly talking about these kinds of things, okay? And then over time, Passover, if you follow this table, Passover begins to replace Easter as the way the word is used in English, okay? And by the way, all these tables are presented for you nicely in the book, that all this information that I have on the screen you can access if you pick up a copy of the book. It's all laid out there for you, okay? So there is, as I said, a 500-year history of Easter being used to refer to the Jewish feast before the word Passover even exists in the English lexicon, first invented by Tyndall in 1530. Okay? So Easter is being used for a long time to refer to the Jewish feast. All right? Now, in the book of John, if we go back to the table here just briefly, which one is it? It's this one here. You will notice that there are some verses in John 11:45, okay, that use the word Easter. So let's just look at that verse just to clinch this argument here. Here is the Bishop's Bible, the base text for the King James, and notice John 11:55, and the Jews' Easter. In the context, talking about Passover, called Easter. Why? Because Easter was a word that was used to describe this for 500 years, okay? The Jews' Easter. We could go to we already talked about the West Saxon Gospels. Let's go to Tyndall. And the Jews' Easter. Let's go to Coverdale, okay? The Jews' Easter. Let's go to Matthew Matthew's Bible. And the Jews' Easter, the Great Bible, okay? And the Jews' Easter, Geneva Bible. Oh, and the Jews' Passover. See, by 1560, Tyndall coined the word Passover in 1530. By 1560, Passover was starting to replace Easter as the preferred English word to describe the Jewish feast. Okay? The Bishop's Bible, which was a revision of the Great Bible, retains this form, and the King James translators change it to Passover in this verse. Okay, we could see that on the table. So here's John 11:55. We show to Easter, Passover in the Geneva 1560, Easter in the Bishops, Passover in the King James. So what you see here is a slow transition from one English word to the other to describe the Jewish feast. All right. So if we come back over here, this is a 500-year history, okay? The following verses were omitted from both TTR's article and Taylor's video connecting Passover and the Feast of Unleavened Bread together as a feast of, quote, 7 days, Exodus 45:21, and explicitly call the Feast of Unleavened Bread the Passover in Luke 22:1. So here's Ezekiel 45:21. In the first month, in the 14th day of the month, ye shall eat the Passover, a feast of 7 days, unleavened bread shall be eaten. Hello. The King James Bible apparently connects Passover with unleavened bread and calls it a feast of 7 days. So the argument that the Passover was only one day, the 14th of the month, and then by the 15th to the 21st was unleavened bread, and those are two wholly different things, clearly is not the case according to Ezekiel 45:21, where it calls the Passover a feast of 7 days in which unleavened bread is eaten. So whatever you're going to say, so like, why is that verse never talked about by all the people arguing that Easter is pagan in Acts 12:4? Gip doesn't talk about it in the answer book. Nobody who's making that argument talks about that verse. Look at Matthew 26:17-18. Now, the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, the disciples came to Jesus saying unto him, where wilt thou that we prepare the Passover? So they're preparing the Passover on the first day of unleavened bread. And notice Jesus is like, wait, time out, guys. You got it wrong. It's only the 14th is the Passover. You need to change your terminology. Jesus doesn't correct, the Lord doesn't correct him here. Okay? So the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, eat the Passover. So there's a connection between the Passover and unleavened bread. And he said, go into the city to such a man and say unto him, the master saith, my time is at hand, I will eat the Passover. So he's going to eat the Passover on the first day of unleavened bread. Isn't a problem for the Lord Jesus Christ, apparently. Okay. So why is that verse never talked about? And perhaps the most explicit verse in the whole discussion is Luke 22:1. Now the feast of unleavened bread drew nigh, which is called the Passover. So when he apprehends him, then were the days of unleavened bread. And when he had apprehended him, he put him in prison and delivered him to 4 quaternions of soldiers to keep him intending after Easter, Easter being a reference to the Jewish feast, like I've showed you, to bring him forth unto the people. Herod is trying to please the Jews. Okay? How do I know? It says, he saw it please the Jews. He proceeded to take Peter also. Let me ask you a question. Would it please the Jews if Peter was executed during their feast, or after their feast? Well, obviously, they don't want Peter executed. Herod is not dumb. He knows that if he wants to please the Jews, he doesn't execute Peter during the Jewish feast when they're occupied keeping the Jewish feast. He would wait until after Easter, after Passover, to bring him forth unto the people. That's what he would do because he's trying to please the Jews. Herod is not celebrating anything. He's trying to please the apostate Jewish leadership of the nation of Israel by killing their leader, the Apostle Peter. That's what's going on here. And Easter is a reference to the Passover here. But I'm a King James Bible corrector. I'm a limited forgiver. I don't know what I'm talking about. So last, the book of Acts is part two, okay, of a two-part treatise, Acts 1:1, addressed to Theophilus. Let me make this window a little smaller so we can get this last part. As such, Luke 22:21, this verse right here, now the Feast of Unleavened Bread drew nigh, which is called the Passover, connects Luke 22:1 connects with Acts 12:3-4 to help Theophilus understand when Peter was arrested by Herod. Okay? None of these points have been addressed in either TTR's blog entry or Taylor's video. And I submit to you that all lovers of the truth need to take these points seriously. Okay? You need to take these points seriously. There are more issues going on here than what Gip is talking about, than what the article, the original article is talking about, or Taylor's cobbled together video. So you need to think long and hard about what's going on here. You need to think about the videos, the tactics that are used to create the video, the way things are portrayed and argued and messaged in social media, and then the fact that all the relevant points are never discussed. They're name-called, ad hominem, and ridiculed, swept under the rug, and nobody is dealing with the substantive facts of the case. Okay? So, look, I get it. I mean, Easter... Those who truly are King James Bible correctors, if I could say it that way, will use at Easter in Acts 12:4 to ridicule the King James Bible. I get it. But that doesn't excuse defenders of the King James Bible from having bad arguments to try to counter those who they're opposing. So these are my thoughts on Easter in Acts 12:4. Okay. If you haven't already done so, again, please consider picking up a copy of the book. The book is the most edited, streamlined presentation of the information. But if you don't or aren't interested in doing that, please at least click the link in the description where you can watch the material and matriculate through this material. All this stuff, the history of the translation, all this stuff is presented in the videos as well as in the book. And the argumentation is made clear and plain. And if you won't listen to me because I'm a terrible person that's a limited forgiver and a Bible corrector, at least read the article here on Easter in Acts 12:4 by the King James Version Today website. And again, they start the article by saying and arguing that Easter is not a pagan word. So I commend all these things to you for your edification and for your consideration. Be a Berean. Study the stuff out for yourself. Check whether or not what I've said is true. Don't just believe me or anybody else making arguments in the public space about doctrine and theology. Look and research it for yourself. The internet is pregnant with tools, with information, with things to help you understand some of these things. So that is my sort of plea. Listen, if you enjoyed this video, like this video, leave a comment, share it, please, if you would. Subscribe and ring the alarm bell on this channel if you haven't already done so. And listen, the most important decision that you'll ever make in your entire life is to trust that Jesus Christ died on the cross for your sins, was buried, and rose again. The simplicity of the gospel is in 1 Corinthians 15:3-4, how that Christ died for our sins according to scriptures, and that he was buried, and that he rose again the third day according to the scriptures. Trust Jesus Christ today, his death on the cross for your sin, his burial, his resurrection. He was delivered for your offenses. He was raised again for your justification. Trust Jesus Christ today before it's everlasting too late. Thanks for your attention, and we'll see you next time.